Jite tanima nobistam, stapitam yena bhutale, svayam rupakada mayam dadati svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamala Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Tambitam Sativam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Setam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Shri Vichakam Kamscha E Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Dapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwere Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Gopa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnaveva Namo Nama Jaisi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shyadvaita Gadadara Shivasari Gora Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, texts 37 and 38. So we can all chant. Yeah, we'll do that. It's Canto 10, Chapter 24, texts 37 and 38. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Text 37. Esha vajanato martyan.
Esha vajanato
nartyan. Kamarupi vanokshakasha.
Kamarupi vanokasha.
Anti asmai namaskyama.
Anti asmai namaskyama.
Sharmane atmano gavam.
Sharmane atmano gavam.
Esho vajanato marchan.
Kamarupi vanokasha.
Hanti asma namasyama.
Sharmane atmano gavam.
Esho vajanato marchan.
Kamarupi vanokasha.
Hanti asmai namasyama.
Sharmani atmano gavam.
Please
stand.
Esho vajanato marchan.
Kamarupi vanokasha.
Hanti asmai namasyama.
Jaya
atmano gavam.
Esho vajanato
marchan.
Hanti asmai namasyama.
Dharmani atmano gavam.
Esho vajanato marchan.
Amarupi vanakasha.
Hanti asmai namasyama. Vakata. Andhyasmai namasyama. Yami yadmanokata.
Esha, this one, Ajanata, Avajanata, those who are neglectful, Martyan, mortals, Kamarupi, assuming any form at will, such as that of snakes who live upon the hill. Vana Okasha, residents of the forest. Hunti will kill. He certainly. Asmai to him. Namasyama, let us pay our obeisances. Shamani, for the protection. Atmana, of ourselves. Gavam, end of the cows. Translation and purport. This Govardhan hill, assuming any form he wishes, will kill any residents of the forest who neglect him. Therefore, let us pay our obeisances to him for the safety of ourselves and our cows. Please repeat. This Govardhan hill, assuming any form he wishes, will kill any residents of the forest who neglect him. Therefore, let us pay our obeisances to him for the safety of ourselves and our cows. Purport. Kamarupi indicates that the form of Govardhan can manifest as poisonous snakes, wild animals, falling rocks, and so on, all of which are competent to kill a human being. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the Lord presented six theoretical points in this chapter. One, that karma alone is sufficient to determine one's destiny. Two, that one's conditioned nature is the supreme controller. Three, that the modes of nature are the supreme controller. Four, that the Supreme Lord is simply a dependent aspect of karma. Five, that he is under the control of karma. Six, that one's occupation is actually worshipable deity. The Lord presented these arguments not because he believed them, but rather because he wanted to stop the impending sacrifice to Indra and divert it to himself in the form of Govardhan Hill. In this way, the Lord desired to agitate that falsely proud demigod. Text 38. Itiadri go dvijamakam vasudeva prachodita yata vidhaya te gropa sa krishna vrajam yayu. Translation, the members of the coward community, having thus been inspired by Lord Vasudeva to properly execute the sacrifice to Govardhan Hill, the cows and the Brahmins returned with Lord Krishna to their village, Vraja. Purport. Although Govardhan Puja was performed in a blissful, successful way, the matter was hardly finished. Lord Indra is, after all, tremendously powerful, and he received news of Govardhan's sacrifice with burning anger. What ensued will be described in the following chapter. Thus ended the the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 24th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Worshipping Govardhan Hill. So here we're getting a little bit of a summary of the chapter. And we're getting, of course, in text 37, a warning. So this summary specifically, when I first read it, I had a little bit of a difficult time with it, because how to speak about a philosophy that Lord Krishna doesn't actually believe in. Why would we discuss it in the first place? But one has to look deeper and behind all this, because obviously Krishna is not speaking something simply whimsical. He has some purpose to fulfill, and there is actually great meaning in everything that Krishna speaks. So, what is it that is being said, has been said already by Krishna? First, he speaks that karma is superior. And of course, in all these points, as with all these 6 points these Krishna has made, we have to remember that what is the purpose? Krishna is seeing that the residents of Vrindavan are ready to perform his sacrifice to Indra. So he's presenting to them reasons, arguments, why you shouldn't do this, why Indra is not going to be able to fulfill some desire that you have, how he doesn't have that power, whatever you're going to do, worshiping Govardhan Hill, he's going to have to automatically give you the results. Whether you worship him or not. So he's presenting different arguments to try and bolster his request with some philosophical points. So this idea that karma is superior, that it drives us, it controls us, is actually part of a kind of a popular idea. That we are guided by our previous karma, especially those who have some philosophical background in the Western ideas. They feel that this karma, you know, we have a certain karma, a certain destiny, a certain duty that we have to perform, and, you know, that's our destiny. That's what's going to control what happens in our lives. It's already, in a sense, mapped out, predestined. And that this is the driving force. This is what's going to make our lives work out however they're going to play out. This is what's going to bring the good and bad in our lives, the favorable and unfavorable situations and reactions. So then why approach God? Because it's already been determined. It's already been determined what's going to happen by our previous lives, our previous actions. So we know that this is not actually a factual argument. This is not actually a correct argument. Because even Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, text 66, he says, Sarva dharmam prachaja, mam ekam sharanam vraja, aham tvam sarva papevyo moksha ishmi ma suchaha. He said, abandon all varieties of religion and your duties, and just surrender unto me, and I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. So Krishna is saying that you have certain karma, and that will determine certain things in your life. But if you surrender unto me, then I will take care of those reactions. Those reactions will be negated, changed. So, in this sense, this argument that karma is so defines our destiny, Krishna is saying, no, there's a way to get beyond that. In particular, Krishna, in the purport, Prabhupada explains that there is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities. With faith and love, one should surrender unto him. According to the process of devotional service, one should simply accept such religious principles that will ultimately lead it to devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his position in the social order, but if by executing that duty one does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness, all his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident that in all circumstances, Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how one should keep body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless and should consider that Krishna is the only basis of progress in his life. As soon as one seriously engages in devotional service to the Lord and full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes freed from all contamination of material nature. And of course says much more. So here we see that in another place in the scriptures, Krishna is actually speaking against this argument. So we can see that Krishna doesn't actually hold that this argument that karma is sufficient to determine destiny. He's not saying that that's the final answer in the Bhagavad Gita. And of course there are some, we have so many past desires and past reactions of activities we perform. And these will give us certain results in our lives. But there's obviously more to that, this whole scenario, how it can play out in our lives if we take shelter of Krishna. So the second point Krishna gives is that one's conditioned nature is the supreme controller. So this is also probably in our own experience a very solid argument, that we are conditioned in certain ways. So we're habituated to act in certain ways. And most specifically, we're conditioned to see ourselves in terms of this body, mind, and senses. So naturally we act in those ways. So that seems to be a superior controlling force in our lives, all these conditionings. But again, we know from Krishna's statements in the Bhagavad Gita that that's not the end of it. There's more. We're expected to go beyond that conditioned nature. Not on our own strength. Not even on the strength of some demigod or other living entity, but rather on the strength of Krishna's order, Krishna's guidance, and devotional service to Krishna. That will lift us beyond our conditioned nature. That conditioned nature is limiting us, but we have to go beyond that. If we remain stuck in that conditioned nature, then, yes, we will repeat in the cycle of birth and death. But if we can break out of that conditioned nature by help from the superior person, Krishna, the ultimate Supreme Lord, who is controlling everything, then we can go beyond this cycle of birth and death, which all living entities are hopelessly bound to. If we observe the vast majority of human society, they are acting according to their conditioned nature. And it does seem that that is the supreme controller for them, because they're just plodding ahead day by day, going through whatever their nature seems to lead them to. They're not using their human body, their intellect, their mind and senses to contact Krishna, to go beyond, to achieve something transcendental beyond this material experience. So, while this is an argument, as it is explained by Srila Vishnubhakti Chakrabarti Thakur, this is an atheistic argument, which doesn't allow for the interaction, the presence, the divine intervention of Krishna. So, that is another important understanding of this argument. And then that the third point is that the modes of nature are the supreme controller. So, that is the rule of this material world. The modes of nature are controlling every living entity. They are directing all the activities, goodness, passion, and ignorance. These three, they mix, they become three, then nine, and 81, and on up into so many millions of different interactions that we can be affected by, covered by. Karma is this material nature. They both cover us and throw us far away from transcendental knowledge. The Supreme Lord following His direction. They throw us away far from that direction. They cover us so that we think that we are this body. They think that this one life is all in all. That what we experience with these senses is reality. But in a fact, it is all simply a dream-like experience. The experience we have of this body is a dreaming condition. It is not reality. It is something that we've assumed, we've entered into, due to a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. And then the modes of nature take over. And then they do become the supreme controller. But Krishna says, Daivihyesha gunamayi mama maya dratyaya. That these material modes of nature are very, very difficult to overcome. But if you surrender unto me, you can easily go beyond them. So this is the real, final purport. They go beyond these modes of nature by surrendering to Krishna. Arjuna, he wanted to follow his nature. And he was going to end up following the control of the three modes of nature. The three modes would be dictating, respect your teachers, respect your elders, don't cause violence, don't cause harm, and then try to live in a certain mode of nature. But that wasn't what Krishna wanted. Krishna called him a fool for understanding that, for accepting that philosophy. He said, you're a fool. This is not true. This is not the final reality. And he ends up step by step instructing Arjuna, now you surrender unto me, and this is how. You come out of this material conditioning, this material identification, material understanding of who you are, and come to the point of understanding you are a spiritual being, you are my part and parcel, and you have an eternal relationship with me. Not a relationship based on this body, but based on spiritual, transcendental life, which is far beyond this body. So again, this point, Krishna has refuted it elsewhere. Text 4 should really stand out in certain ways to us, because it says that the Supreme Lord is simply a dependent aspect of karma. Of course, this one has been discussed probably in many Bhagavatam classes. Popular religionist philosophers, they're trying to figure out, what is God's role in this whole universe? What does he do? Is he in control? and trying to answer that ultimate question, why do bad things happen to good people? They must be because he is simply dependent on what has happened, what you deserve. He cannot change it. He's dependent. You deserve something, you're going to get it. He's just, you know, order fulfiller. Okay, this is what has to happen. Here you are. He's sitting there in the heart. Okay, now it's time for you to, this to happen, something good. Now it's time for something bad to happen. He's simply carrying it out. So this is actually a very popular philosophy that is, again, atheistic. And, of course, we know that although Krishna is in the heart as a super soul, he's directing the wanderings of all living entities. What is he directing them to? Just to follow their karma, their reactions? Is that all he's doing? Or is he step by step directing us in a path to come back to him? To come back to Godhead. What is his real position? Those who don't have sufficient knowledge, who are not getting knowledge from the right source, as is very prevalent all across the world nowadays, they don't know. They don't know what God is really doing. What his role is in their ultimate experience of life. Yes, he may be supreme to me, but how does that work? But those who get knowledge from the right source, from Krishna himself, and through the disciplic succession, where it's untampered with, no mental speculation. Oh, what is he doing? I don't know. Let me guess. They're getting the true, actual facts. Then they know what Krishna's purpose is. Krishna just doesn't create this material world only for the living entities to fulfill their desires. But it is a means of rectification. A means to bring those living entities who have deviated away from him back to his eternal abode so that they can again enter to his eternal pastimes. Not to simply remain here in some cycle of samsara. Some continuous action-reaction of karma, that he is simply an order-taker, an order-fulfiller. And point number five, given, is that Krishna is under the control of karma. Now, of course, from the very early days of becoming in contact with Krishna consciousness, we should know that this is not true. Ultimately. What is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of this statement? Who is determining the course of our actions? Is Krishna actually able to intercede and change the course of our actions? Krishna says in the 18th chapter, as we have read, that he can change the directions of our life. And we should all want that. You know, having learned that have a certain destiny with samsara, cycle of birth and death, so much happiness and distress coming, but ultimately it is all unhappiness, all frustration. So we want to change that. We want to see a different ending on the story. How will we do that? Is it under our control? No. Is it under the control of Indra or some demigods? As Lord Brahma speaks to Hiranyakashipu, I cannot give you eternal life because I myself am not eternal. How can I give you what I don't have? So the demigods themselves are in this material world and they are living under their own conditioned nature, their own karma. So they cannot free the living entity from this karma, but Krishna can. And Krishna says, I will do that. I am the swift deliverer from the cycle of birth and death. He gives us that guarantee, and that guarantee attracts us to him. It gives us a motivation to worship him, that we no longer have to stay in this material world, in this samsara, uselessly going through the cycles of karma, action and reaction. So these are actually very important to understand. Because even the vast majority of the world, they're not actually sure. Is God under the control of some other rules and he's simply an enforcer? But we know from having studied the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Krishna says to Gopakumar, he says that I have certain rules so I govern this material world by. But I was so anxious to get you back here to be with me that I broke them all. I made a special arrangement for you to come back quickly. And so that statement of Gopakumar is actually part of Krishna's statement in Bhagavad Gita, that don't worry about all these reactions. I will relieve you from all that suffering. I will relieve you from all those reactions and make it possible for you to get out of this cycle of birth and death. And as we were reading in the purport of text 66, chapter 18, that we don't even have to worry about our own maintenance. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna as the only basis for progress in his life. There is no need of thinking how one should keep body and soul together. The whole world is driven by how to keep body and soul together. But for the devotee, Krishna says, you don't even have to worry about that. I'm taking care of that. I will take care of that for you. And finally, the argument that one's occupation is actually worshipable deity. So this we can see in the actions of the residents of Vrindavan. They're worshipable occupation is that of Vaishya, protecting the cows. The cows, not just their occupation, but the cows are very dear to Krishna. And also very dear to the residents of Vrindavan. The cows were providing all their livelihood. But there was more, especially for our understanding, that Krishna actually is saying, yes, you follow your occupation. That is important. Stay within your occupational duties. And worship me by that occupation. Give up the results of your occupation to me, to serve me. Always think of me while you're doing all these duties. And do them with a mood of pleasing me. So these instructions are Krishna's further explanation of how to do this. Otherwise here, this occupational duty, yes, they're going to do their occupation. The residents of Vrindavan, they're going to maintain the cows, protect the cows. And the presentation, Krishna says, yes, the cows will take care of you. They'll provide all the important foodstuffs. They'll provide the financial, economic basis for your lives. So don't worship Krishna. Don't worship Indra. Because Indra can't. These cows are going to take care of you. So we can see that these arguments are ones that Krishna actually doesn't believe. He's not saying that these are the ultimate truth, but he's trying to show them how the demigod Indra is not the person who is giving them all these results, controlling their karma, controlling their destiny, therefore a worshipful deity. But if we look at actually the nature of the lives of the residents of Vrindavan, we have to understand that there is a higher principle going on. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. This surrender unto Krishna Is that instruction for the residents of Vrindavan? Not actually, because they're always surrendered to Krishna. We can see in this whole 10th canto, their lives have no other purpose than to please Krishna. So Krishna is the one that is controlling their destiny and their karma. And he's giving them protection, as we'll see in later on in this Govardhan Leela. As soon as the torrential rains come, where do they go? They go to Krishna. Krishna, take care of us. They don't go anywhere else. And they know Krishna will take care of them. The coward boys, they walk into the mouth of Agasura very confident that if there's any danger, Krishna will take care. So they're not worried about their karma. They're ultimately only concerned about Krishna. And when we look at the one's conditioned nature, we know that they are already surrendered to Krishna, so there is no conditioned nature for them. Their nature, as Prabhupada has described, is simply to love Krishna. That is their nature, simply to love Krishna. So the residents of Vrindavan are already on this platform, a platform which we are trying to aspire for by following this platform of surrender. And to see the modes of nature are the supreme controller. But we know, what is the nature of Vrindavan? Krishna is controlling everything. The sun, the moon, the rivers, the clouds, they're all simply trying to serve Krishna. Whatever Krishna will be pleased with, whatever Krishna desires, they're executing immediately. So the nature, the activities of Vrindavan are all directly being controlled by Krishna. The seasons, when Krishna enjoys certain pastimes with the gopis, all six seasons are present simultaneously. How is that possible? Because Krishna is controlling the material nature. The nature is serving Krishna. So it is a different situation in Vrindavan. And is Krishna dependent on the actions of karma? Yes, in a certain way, with the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna is dependent on their love. He's dependent on their love. He's only trying to satisfy their loving desires to serve him. He's always acting that position to try and please his devotees. So yes, he is dependent, but only on their love. And is he under the control of karma? That is also that Krishna is actually trying to, because they want to please Krishna, Krishna wants to please them. There is no, these other rituals are actually meaningless to them. The Govardhan, Indra Puja, does that mean they don't love Krishna? No. They were some rituals that they had performed from generations, so they should do again. But they easily gave them up as soon as Krishna even gave atheistic arguments to give them up. Because they just simply love Krishna. Whatever he said, they would immediately do. There was no question. And finally, that one's occupation is actually worshipful deity. Because their occupation was to take care of the cows and to please Krishna by serving the cows and to please Krishna with all their occupational duties. So yes, their occupations were supreme because they were simply meant for Krishna's pleasure. And therefore, their occupations and they themselves are worshipable by everyone. So these are, of course, a different level of understanding that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives this sarva dharmam parichaya mamekam charanam braja, this instruction to surrender. But here in the activities in the 10th canto, the residents of Vrindavan, We see those who are already surrendered, what their lives look like, how they absorb themselves, how they're relating to Krishna, so that we can mold our consciousness so that we can come to that level of dedication to Krishna, so that we can surrender and come to that level of full absorption and simply pleasing Krishna and having no other purpose, no other goal in life. And we have Krishna's warning that if we don't worship Govardhan Hill, we may be attacked by Govardhan Hill and even killed. So Govardhan Hill is Krishna. The snakes on the hill, the ferocious animals, the falling rocks, any of these could easily kill someone. So Krishna is saying, either you surrender or you'll be killed. So these are some of my thoughts on this couple verses, and if anyone has any questions or comments, please let's discuss this further. This is actually a very wonderful leela, and as we see, Krishna accomplished so many things, so many relationships, so many instructions. Yes, Trivikram Prabhu.
What's the purpose of worshiping the demigods? And maybe if you could bring any scriptural reference to this. To this point.
Well, we have all practical, some of us at least have practical experience that when you're working a job, your main point is you have to please your boss or the owner. If you please him, then the job will go smoothly and you'll get all your benefits that you aspired for when you took that job. So these owners or managers, these are the demigods. They're controlling different aspects of material nature, and one can see that as the immediate boss, the immediate controller, because they have these managerial functions to perform. And if they're pleased, then they'll make sure you get the things you desire. If you please the boss, you'll get a raise, you'll get the vacation you want, you'll get a higher position. So that's kind of the rule of living in the material world. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those who have misguided intelligence, they will worship the demigods. And they will get their temporary results that they're after. They want something for this material body, a comfortable material situation. But he's not telling Arjuna to follow that path. He's telling Arjuna, just forget all that and surrender to me. Aham Adi Devanam. I am the supreme demigod. I'm above all the demigods. They're doing what I direct them to do. But those who are not intelligent enough, they think they only see the first level. And Krishna says, okay, that's what you want. I'll make your faith strong. You'll get that reciprocation you're looking for. But actually, I'm doing it, not just them. They can't do it if I don't give them the ability to do it. Just like the manager. Example, I'll give you a little scenario that happened to me. I was working one job, and at some point or other, my manager decided he needed somebody else as an employee, had a different skill set that he really wanted, and so he couldn't hire another person, so he had to dismiss me so he could hire the other person. So he did that. So he had that power. But a year or two later, I saw he also was out of a job, looking for a job. So he wasn't the highest controller. He had some control, but he wasn't the highest controller. So in that way, we can see that, yes, they can give, they have some power, but they're not the ultimate. Any other question or comment?
Krishna. When you were speaking about karma and how Krishna and Krishna consciousness can change karma, there's the analogy of the fan. You unplug the fan and it still has to wind down. So are we bound by the winding down, you know, previous activities? We have to go through that, or can even that be changed?
Well, the acharyas have explained that if Krishna finished all your karma immediately without any of this token karma, your body would just disintegrate. There's no more reactions. It's all gone. But because we have we've come out of this conditioned life, we still have to become reconditioned. Do we have the mentality of the residents of Vrindavan? Maybe not. But that's what we need to develop. So we need time and facility to do that. So we're meant by the process of sadhana, bhakti, to develop that mood. Today I was listening, I heard a very nice definition of sadhana. It is the process of expressing our love through our conditioned nature. We're trying to redevelop, rekindle, and express our love for Krishna. And we, in the beginning, we do it very poorly. But Krishna says, always chant my glories. Everything you do, offer to me. All your charity, give to me. You know, all your sacrifices are for my benefit. So we're, by sadhana, bhakti, we're going step by step in that direction till we are completely re-identified, re-changed our identity to being the eternal servant of Krishna. So if we can do that immediately, without any interruption, that would be great. But usually it takes time. Any more questions? Madam Mohan, no comment?
Well, I was thinking that when you unplug the fan, that means it's not making any more karma. So when you perform devotional service, those activities do not produce another material body. So that's where the fan's unplugged, is because you're not producing more. And then what you already have, your Krishna's, I guess the second instruction, maybe his first instruction, is how learning how to tolerate these conditions by tatedu kampam. And it progresses on that it actually becomes, everything becomes impetuses for remembering Krishna in different capacities. Generally, humility.
Yes, we want our love, our expressions of devotion, to be uninterrupted and, of course, unmotivated. So that uninterrupted is not easy. So Krishna tells us how to do it. It is a process of absorption, but right now we've become absorbed in the material world, material energy, material body. So become absorbed in Krishna's service and loving expression for Krishna, that takes this process of sadhana. All right, maybe we should end the... Oh, you have one question? You go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time I come across this particular verse. It seems completely bewildering. It's turning everything upside down. Is it irony or something? I still don't quite get it, so...
What is it you don't get?
Well, I only know what you put up there, so I haven't read it before, so I kind of retain everything that was there, but... The idea that Krishna is not the controller, that he's only controlled by... This is the opposite of everything.
Yes, exactly. These are atheistic arguments. They're not the ultimate truth. So Krishna is presenting these things simply to sway the opinions, the desires, directions of the residents of Vrindavan. But as explained in this verse and previous verses, these are atheistic. They don't recognize the true picture of Krishna's position.
And so why is he saying this then?
That was my point at the very beginning. How can we even discuss a philosophy with Krishna doesn't believe?
Indeed.
So we were just trying to go a little deeper and actually see what does Krishna really, what is the real philosophy Krishna presents, especially in Bhagavad Gita, and why he's even saying this. Simply, and how the residents of Vrindavan are reacting to this philosophy. Are they becoming atheists? No. Should we become atheists? No. But it's an interaction to show that Indra is not the supreme. Therefore, why worship him? It's a waste of time. He cannot give benefits to your sacrifice. He cannot interrupt any reactions. Is that okay? I mean, you know, we're not going to try and apply that philosophy that Krishna is not supreme, because that is not the absolute truth. You understand? Actually, to be honest, you have to understand that even like Buddhism, it's covered atheism. Buddhism says there is no supreme person. You know, at the end, you simply merge into this non-existence. It's atheism. But who introduced that? Krishna, in the form of Buddha. So Krishna even has to tell us how to be atheists. Otherwise, we don't know how to understand anything. You know, Krishna has to give us atheistic philosophy. He comes as Shankaracharya in the form of Lord Shiva. He comes as Shankaracharya to tell us how to be Mayavadis. So everything is coming from Krishna. And so those who want to go away, Krishna says, okay, here's how you go away. Just like he says, I make the faith of those who want to worship the demigods, I make their faith strong. Because he wants us to worship the demigods? No. Because you want to worship the demigods. And if you didn't have faith, you wouldn't do it. So then you would become atheistic. So maybe if you become a little faithful in demigods, maybe you'll gradually figure out there's someone higher than these demigods. So he's trying to get us on a path, somewhere progressive. But don't follow this arguments that he was giving here in this chapter. That's not for us. Go ahead, Madhava.
Sometimes, I think it was a little earlier, it mentions that he's playful.
Yeah?
This is a type of sarcasm. You know, he's teased it. I think they used the word teasing. He's also, he teases and he plays and he uses sarcasm. So he's how old is he here when he's saying this? Seven.
I mean, we can see, you know, even later on, Krishna also plays with the gopis, who are the topmost devotees. And he said, you know, just be happy and meditate on me and be peaceful. And how can you say that? We don't do that.
I was thinking how Prabhupada also did that. He would argue with his disciples, and then he would, you know, take the impersonalist side and then argue the other way around. So you can see Prabhupada also was very playful in that way.
True.
And I was thinking how Krishna is a good lawyer. No matter where it is, he can argue at any point, you know.
The lawyer's viewpoint. There we go. Actually, yeah, Lord Chaitanya used to do that as well. When he was teaching in the school, he would present certain questions, and when nobody could answer them, he would answer them. And then he would refute them, and then he would refute that refutation. And by the time he went through all these, the people were just like, okay, whatever you say, we'll just follow it. Again, it's too much, you know. What is right? What is wrong? You can twist it all around until I can't understand anything anymore. That's Krishna is the source of everything, and his intellectual capacity is certainly far beyond ours. You know, we don't see that the residents of Vrindavan are actually taking those arguments in a philosophical sense seriously. They're just like, whatever you say, Krishna, we're going to do that. You know? That's the essence of the internal meaning. The external meaning, we take a little more deeply as to what is the real truth, but the internal meaning, whatever Krishna says, they'll do. They were far beyond whatever Krishna was, you know, these atheistic arguments. They were not going to influence them in the least. All right, maybe we can end here. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.